Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Dr. L. Markman is the National Co-Director of Integrated Behavioral Health at One Medical. She focuses on integrated behavioral health impact and psychosocial drivers of population health for patients across the country. Prior to this, Dr. Markman served as the Regional Director of Behavioral Health for Iora Health. She has trained and worked in a variety of integrated primary and specialty care clinics across academic and VA medical centers. In addition, she serves as a clinical assistant professor for the University of Houston's College of Medicine. Dr. Markman earned her Doctor of Psychology degree from LaSalle University and her Master's of Public Health degree from the University of Texas Health Science Center at Houston. Hello, Dr. Markman. Welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
It is an absolute pleasure. And I want to start off by saying that you are my first psychologist on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me. It is an honor to be the first psychologist.
There are, I'm sure, many of the listeners today that are familiar with you. Some may be familiar with me. Some may be meeting us for the first time. Why don't we take this opportunity and have you formally introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what your role is, and how do you help take healthcare to a higher level?
Absolutely. Well, I currently co-lead One Medical's National Integrated Behavioral Health Program. I'm a clinical health psychologist and public health professional by training, and I've always been very interested in the relationships between behavioral health, medicine, and social drivers of health. So for a long time while I was completing my clinical training, I was learning more and more on the ground about the profound flaws and inequities in our healthcare system, and seeing the need for just full industry disruption and innovation. And I saw that in order to make a significant and sustainable impact, we really need to think upstream. We need to change the way that we define health and change how we scope, scale, and incentivize healthcare accordingly. So in a nutshell, my current role is to help think through all of this and to represent behavioral health in our national strategy for value-based primary care. And then I also manage an amazing team of BHS, or behavioral health specialists, for our senior health markets in the eastern half of the United States, which serves primarily Medicare and dual eligible patients. So I partner with our behavioral health leadership and clinical performance and strategy teams, as well as our medical operations and clinical teams, to kind of move the needle on our key drivers and patient outcomes through behavioral and social health programs and partnerships. So we're really working on better understanding, improving, and expanding our program's impact on population health outcomes, cost, and quality. And then on our clinical model, it's very much built on the foundation of PCBH, or primary care behavioral health, with some pretty cool and innovative modifications that are unique to value-based care that really enable our behavioral health specialists to impact our whole population, even when we're not physically or virtually in the room with the patient.
What I really love about this, Elle, is the way that you describe how the organization is, I want to say, attacking some of the challenges that society is facing today. And for those that are listening today that may be unfamiliar with One Medical, you know, I want to kind of give some context to the audience, because I think that One Medical is a huge company that has grown dramatically in the last couple of years. So I know that it is a membership-based organization that provides primary care services both in person and online. I believe it started in 2007.
2007, if I'm not mistaken, with one clinic. And now from my research, I believe it has like over 188 locations all across the United States. What is really interesting is that the organization or the company went public about 2 years ago, and it's gotten some major investors that are vested in how One Medical is growing, right? We've got the Carlyle Group that's invested in it. It's also backed by Alphabet, which is the parent company of Google. And some of the things that I think have been very instrumental in how One Medical is approaching behavioral health in a primary care setting is some of the recent news. I'll call them recent, like in the last 3 years. The first is that maybe about a year ago, it acquired Iora Health for about $2.1 billion. Even before that, it had acquired another organization called Rise Labs. And it's also been involved in a lot of partnerships. So in my area around Chicago, One Medical has actually partnered with Advocate Aurora Health. And very recently, there was news that it's also partnering with Hartford Healthcare. So the way that One Medical is positioning itself to be able to manage so many different facets of both behavioral health, primary care, clinical services is a really full service organization. And from a numbers perspective, like the growth of the organization has been really remarkable. I think earlier this year, right at the end of Q1, One Medical reported 767,000 members. That's like a 30% increase. That is huge. And they're still projecting even more members. I think by the end of the year, like around 830,000 members. So, you know, when you see how the organization is positioning itself and adding the right services and delivering them in a way where patients see the value, organizations see the value, and the services that are being provided are in a holistic capacity. It's really an organization that I think the listeners and their friends and their counterparts really should be perking up and taking heed and wondering, you know, how they can be a part of this groundswell is the best way for me to describe it. Elle, you had talked a little bit to me about primary care behavioral health, right? And I think a lot of times people instantly just equate behavioral health to mental health. It's been in the news for many years, you know, for the last few years. Certainly mental health has been on the rise, but it's not as isolated as we think. It's not just, oh, behavioral health equals mental health. It's pretty all-encompassing. Could you share with us a little bit more how behavioral health is really defined? Like, what are the services and what are the approaches that behavioral health specialists are dealing with on a daily basis with their patients? And who really constitutes or what categories of healthcare providers make up behavioral health specialists?
Great question. So when we think of kind of traditional specialty mental health care services, obviously we're tackling a lot of the same things. But what we found is that there's truly an access barrier to really being able to establish with traditional mental health. And it's not necessarily something that everybody as a population needs. And so primary care behavioral health, kind of the basis is to bridge kind of that middle ground between primary care and specialty mental health care. So it's to bridge the medical and the behavioral health realms and truly provide whole person care within primary care. So this means fully integrating behavioral health providers within primary care teams in order to provide kind of that timely access to high quality behavioral health care, typically the same day or the next day as a primary care appointment through warm handoffs from a primary care physician or health coach. And so again, the model reduces these access barriers that we typically think of when we think of specialty mental health care and the stigma that's often getting in the way of individuals seeking that higher level of mental health support, especially among our highest risk or higher needs, vulnerable populations, such as older adults who are facing multiple chronic conditions and some significant social challenges as well. And I think the unique aspect of our PCBH model at One Medical is the emphasis on population health management. And that's certainly something that is not as much a priority in specialty mental health care. So to effectively scale, I think this level of primary care behavioral health integration, we as behavioral health specialists do consulting, we teach, we empower all members of the care team to ensure that each and every patient is having that behavioral health touch. So this might include patient-centered communication, active listening, patient-driven goal setting, safety planning, so on. And we monitor depression screening as well to ensure that we're identifying and addressing behavioral health challenges within primary care, both individually and for an entire practice, an entire market, region, or even nationally as well. So we are, when we think about integration, that means also that we're fully huddling and rounding with the rest of the primary care team to represent that behavioral health voice whenever we're thinking about patient care and chronic medical conditions. So as a program, about 50% of our impact is on what you might expect: depression, anxiety, dementia, severe mental illness, a lot of what we tackle in specialty mental health care settings. But the other 50%, and this is the piece that's really unique about primary care behavioral health, is on chronic condition management, helping patients manage their pain, their diabetes or their hypertension, cope with a new cancer diagnosis, help them quit smoking, working with them to really change behaviors and in alignment with their personal health goals, and supporting the care team and providing the best possible care at home, and then thus lowering healthcare costs and improving quality of life. So while there's a lot of overlap with specialty mental health care, it's much more of a partnership within the primary care setting to tackle whole health.
You know, one of the things that you just called out is how PCBHS needs to be a part of the interdisciplinary team, but rounding with other healthcare providers, right? It is such a critical piece, because just when you spoke about, you know, when you have a patient that's just been diagnosed with cancer, you know, we all as healthcare professionals focus on the physiological changes and some of the, you know, the side effects of medications that are going to come, but we rarely address the mental the mental challenges and the shock that comes with those types of diagnoses, let alone pain, right? I think pain is so underreported in some ways. And the fact that the psychological impact of pain is usually not really addressed by a lot of healthcare providers. So I'm really glad to hear how you've kind of put that into the framework of where healthcare needs to shift and how you and your organization are making that happen. Elle, can you share with us maybe a recent success of you and your team within this model that you've been able to pivot and point to say, because of the changes that we've led in this space, you know, we're really proud because this was an issue and these are the efforts that we took on and here's the results, because I think that it would be helpful for the audience to recognize, you know, it sounds great what you're talking about, right? But they always want demonstrable proof. It's just like any other healthcare provider or scientists would want. I'd love to hear a story about where you and your team at One Medical were able to see an issue, address it, prioritize it, and create the strategy to execute upon where you have some demonstrable results.
Absolutely. So I will say I'm impressed every day by the amazing individuals on the behavioral health team and constantly learning from one another and sharing knowledge and figuring out how we can better support our teams and our patients in new ways. And the first thing that comes to my mind is right now that we're rolling out a training series to all of our behavioral health specialists on advanced care conversations, which are incredibly, incredibly difficult for any provider on a care team, anybody who's ever been a part of one of these conversations, but they're so incredibly important for both individual patients and as a part of transforming the healthcare systems. So these are conversations that we have with patients and their loved ones about serious illness and end-of-life decision-making. And our incredibly skilled and passionate BHS partner with physicians to build company-wide clinician confidence. That's something that we're working on right now. And we have a lot of folks who come in with different specialty, different experience having these conversations. And several of our behavioral health specialists who have more of this experience and more of this comfort have identified a gap in this clinician confidence and are working on building a multi-part training series for behavioral health specialists to be able to learn more about what these conversations might look like, learn better what our scope is and how to partner, best practices around partnering with PCPs. And what we have seen is a lot more confidence in having these conversations, a lot more behavioral health voice in initiating these conversations, and a lot of more partnership. What we haven't seen yet, and we haven't been able to actually dig into the data yet to see if this is leading to more conversations, we're still sort of building that piece in, and I'm excited. I'm excited to take a look and see both qualitatively and quantitatively if this is leading to more meaningful conversations and more meaningful and empowered patient decision-making when it comes to end-of-life care.
Elle, the focus that you have with, you know, teaching and training other healthcare professionals is remarkable, and it's necessary. Do you find that most healthcare professionals are receptive to the conversations and topics that you have with them in educating them and helping them shift the way that they approach patients and other healthcare providers? Or is there still some leftover resistance from previous generations that you still encounter? And what is that like?
Well, I will say we're very fortunate in One Medical Senior Health that we have such amazing health coaches, nurses, physicians who are always wanting to learn and always wanting to partner and really kind of seeing the value in behavioral health on the team and recognizing that we can only improve patient care together. And both of us both kind of whatever the scope is of each individual licensed professional or care team member, there's always a ceiling unless you partner and you learn more from one another. And so I think that is part of the strength of senior health and integrated primary care is that those folks who join that environment are looking to learn and are looking to kind of expand their own scope in for what is best for the patient. So it really, like you said, it depends. I think we all come across different levels of openness and different levels of curiosity. I feel very fortunate to be in an environment where everyone is very open and excited to learn from one another.
Yeah. The spirit of collaboration is critical for any success, right? Organizational, individual, patient, and professional. So I'm glad to hear that that exists at One Medical. And I'm glad that you're a part of that because I feel that, you know, being an older professional, I've had to experience the resistance from other healthcare providers, which, you know, back then, we're talking 20, 30 years ago, the mindset was stay in your lane, I'll stay in mine. And now we all know that that's a recipe for disaster. Everybody needs to be on the same page, have access to the same data, be able to be in a collaborative environment where we place the patient's priorities first, and then we all work together as a team. So I'm really glad to hear that. Elle, you're positioned in a really remarkable role, right? You are both a clinical psychologist and you are also an executive where you lead a team. One of the things that I find very fascinating about guests like you that come on the show is that because you not only are teaching your team members best practices and guiding them in terms of their delivery of their performance, you are also collaborating with others across the industry to see what changes are coming and how to be best prepared for them. So I'm curious to know, like, when you think about primary care behavioral health 5 years from now, like, what are some of the advances that you are hearing about, seeing, and preparing for so that you, One Medical, everyone else within that healthcare discipline is going to be able to say, this is what we know is here. So before we get there, we need to be able to move obstacles, remove barriers, and be advanced so that when these challenges actually surface, we're ahead of the curve.
Yeah, great question. I anticipate that primary care behavioral health is only going to gain traction over the next 5, 10, 15 years. And as a healthcare industry, I think we're finally coming around to accept three important realities. The brain is connected to the body. The body exists in the context of its environment. And our environment is currently ridden with structural bias and inequity. And these are hardly novel concepts, but they're concepts that have been long ignored in healthcare to the detriment of millions of Americans, I think, throughout our country's history. So I anticipate over these next 5, 10, 15 years, we're going to be expanding the scope of healthcare. And that will include integrating behavioral and social healthcare into primary care as an imperative. So primary care is all about the health of the population, improving quality of care while reducing costs. And to achieve this, we need to achieve it for everyone in the population. So that means addressing social determinants of health and behavioral health as an essential part of that equation, both on the ground in healthcare settings and in healthcare policy and leadership. I think, and I hope, we'll see a lot more behavioral health providers in healthcare leadership and in public office as well. We have a very important voice that has historically been siloed within this idea of specialty mental health care as separate from any other piece of healthcare. And that's been siloed similarly in healthcare networks and settings. And thus, I think in leadership has been underrepresented as a whole. I think that's the number one thing that's changing. The other piece that comes to mind is this idea I mentioned previously about social determinants of health. So I am very proud to be part of an organization that's working hard to transform healthcare in the United States. And this is a massive undertaking. So we have the highest healthcare costs of any high-income nation, and yet we spend the lowest, or we see the lowest life expectancy and some of the worst health outcomes. So we spend more on care, spend more on specialist visits, unhelpful tests and treatments, hospital stays. We take more prescription medications, and we pay higher prices for all of these things, but we don't seem to be getting any more out of it. So we're not healthier overall. And in fact, at the end of our lives, we tend to both spend the most and suffer the most. As a healthcare industry, we're really not good at asking patients what matters most to them and making thoughtful decisions that reflect those values. In an industry currently that's incentivized to spend more to make more, we forget that more care, more expenses does not always mean better care and better quality of life. And we neglect many of the systemic contributors to poor health and health inequity, particularly in our older adult population. So when we talk about healthcare transformation, we have to talk about this idea of social determinants of health and structural problems that are so deeply embedded in our current healthcare system. We have to talk about social isolation and loneliness, poverty, homelessness, food insecurity. We have to talk about structural racism and sex inequality and gender identity. We have to talk about ableism and ageism, about language barriers, tech literacy, weight bias. We have to talk about solo seniors or older adults without a support system. I mean, all of this together is healthcare, and we're not thinking about it that way. And I think we're starting to now, and it's just going to continue down this route for the next 5, 10, 15 years. Because without addressing all of these factors, we're going to continue to put forth expensive and incomplete solutions to extremely complex problems. And that's really what population-based primary care and value-based care is looking to solve. Incentivizing healthcare providers to focus on the quality of care and outcomes rather than quantity. So One Medical Senior Health is a major player in this space, really driving meaningful innovation, transformation. We focus on delivering a more personalized care experience, really catered to each patient's needs, from longer appointments with providers who actually are listening actively, on-site lab services, proactive reminders about care needs. We really are working hard to make sure that patients are supported in navigating the health journey, their own health journey, and they don't fall through the cracks of a complex healthcare system. And where there are cracks, we build solutions. And a big part of that is primary care behavioral health, in my mind.
Elle, you have hit on so many beautiful topics because I think it's really important. I mean, you're talking about so many factors that go into adequate care, right? You're talking about solo seniors. And I'm a primary power of attorney for 3 elderly parents. So I definitely empathize with some of those challenges that they face and what I see other family members and non-family members struggle as well. It also sounds a little overwhelming, like for me, when I listen to you talk about like 20 plus different things that the healthcare industry needs to focus on. And you know, my instant thought is, you know, how are we going to do it all? Is there like a low hanging fruit of the 20 plus things that we talked about that you would say, hey, if we're going to start somewhere, which is what we need to do, this is where like the top 3 things are that we are focusing on now. And then gradually phase 2, phase 3, because I know that, you know, I want to be a part of this. But I would just listen to 20 things and I'm like, whoa, how do I help?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is overwhelming. And I think that's why we talk so much about healthcare disruption, because that feels like it's the only thing at this point that we can do is really start from the ground up to redefine, again, this idea of what health even is in the first place, and then accordingly build out healthcare to actually capture what we need to capture in order to keep our population healthy in the way that they want to be healthy. And I think I would say the lowest hanging fruit, to be honest, is to be really intentional about who we bring to the table as a voice in that transformation. And we need to diversify leadership. We need to have not just medicine kind of at the table in the forefront, because when you you know, when that's what you're bringing to the table, when that's the perspective, I mean, absolutely, that needs to be the expertise they bring. What we need is we need balance. We need public health professionals. We need individuals who are community members, who have that community voice, who are coming forward and saying, here are the challenges, the real life challenges that are getting in the way of us being able to utilize these medical advancements or pay for our medications because we have all of these other things that are challenges in the community. We need to have behavioral health as a voice in leadership. We need to have nursing as a voice in leadership. We need to have all of these, this diversity in leadership in order to first understand the problem and understand what health actually looks like. So that is the probably step one in my mind to really make us feel better equipped to even start tackling these problems, which I do think is starting.
And Elle, I hope you're part of that leadership team or the part of that leadership group that's going to be going to Washington, D.C. and, you know, introducing bills, because I do agree with you. Like, you know, and that's one of the reasons why this show was, in, you know, created, right, is to give a voice to healthcare professionals who understand from a clinical perspective what the challenges are and to be a voice for their profession so that they are able to make meaningful change based on truth and based on actual, you know, being in the midst of things. You've mentioned behavioral health specialists multiple times, and I want to kind of dig in a little bit in this, right? When I think of a BHS, behavioral health specialist, right? Instantly, I go to psychology and licensed care social workers. But are there other categories of behavioral health specialists that you would say, hey, don't, let's not forget them because they are a part of this solution as well?
Yes, thank you for bringing me back to that because I know that was part two of your question earlier and I didn't quite get to it. So behavioral health specialists, and I'm biased in saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway, they're unicorns of clinicians. They can do it all. So our integrated behavioral health team, just kind of as a snapshot for One Medical, comprises 30 licensed providers with expertise kind of across realms of behavioral health. So we have several clinical health psychologists or clinical psychologists like myself, as well as licensed clinical social workers, licensed mental health counselors. There's also, I mean, a behavioral health specialist is more so capturing the basis of the role as a consultant with both the patient and the care team. So that can also include, you know, licensed mental health or licensed professional counselors, licensed marriage and family therapists. I mean, there are so many behavioral health degrees. The list goes on and on. And some of us at One Medical have expertise in subspecialty areas as well. So pain psychologists or, you know, specialty in substance use treatment, sleep, geriatric care. And then others have more of a generalist mindset, right? It's almost like emergency medicine. We think of emergency physicians. They can kind of get their hands in a lot of different things and they have enough expertise in everything to be able to make an impact in the moment with any kind of referral issue that might come up or any question the patient might be struggling with. So I mentioned the advanced care planning piece, the emphasis right now on advanced care conversations, but we have, I mean, BHS with expertise, like I said, in chronic pain, hypertension, diabetes, who are really bringing forward that expertise to develop and pilot interdisciplinary chronic disease pathways in collaboration with medical providers as well. We have BHS involved in work with health equity, social determinants of health, diversity, equity, inclusion, and social justice initiatives, team training in age-friendly, trauma-informed, LGBTQIA+ inclusive care. List kind of goes on. In summary, they're really rock stars. I think the commonality is that we're all passionate about primary care behavioral health and integrated care and working on multidisciplinary teams. And then we bring our other passions to work to make meaningful impact and make primary care behavioral health better.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Now, we've talked a lot about, you know, your organization and the great things that One Medical is doing. I'd like to kind of pivot a little bit now and more into about you and your professional career. You know, when I take a look at the role that you play today, I know that you're a national co-director of integrated behavioral health at One Medical. Prior to this, when you were working at Iora Health, you were a regional director of behavioral health. And then you've served as a clinical health psychologist at both Iora Health and a James Haley VA in Tampa.
So you've had the opportunity to walk alongside other healthcare professionals and help patients, advance their outcomes by working with them directly and then to move into this larger space. And with each step that you've taken in your career, you've had to make some pretty interesting choices, right? Like you don't just wake up one morning and decide, oh, this is a no-brainer. I'm just going to be the national code director because it's just what I was born to do. I'd like to hear a little bit about some of the factors that went into your decision-making process when you realized that you were poised or presented an opportunity to move into a leadership role, right? As a psychologist or pharmacist or nurse, you always have this one-on-one relationship with your patients. But when you move into a leadership role, most of the time you distance yourself almost completely with patient care and you take on this managerial role where you're now responsible for a team. Was that an easy transition for you or were you prepared for that? I'd like to know who you had to talk things out and then what you had to decide on your own to say, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, I think important to say, I am so incredibly proud to be a behavioral health provider. And every day I'm amazed by my colleagues and just the empathy and the patience and truly the artfulness of patient care, period. But I can speak mostly to being a behavioral health patient care provider. And I absolutely love clinical care and I love working with patients. And I think the common theme throughout my training and my early career had been this frustration that it's difficult to make an impact, it feels like, beyond patient care as a behavioral health provider. So I think I saw a lot of the gaps in having a behavioral health voice in clinical systems design and strategy and higher management policy making. I think behavioral health providers have this incredibly unique people-focused lens that often is missing altogether from the table. And I think as a psychologist, there are two traditional pathways that we think about. We think about clinical work and we think about research. And I am a firm believer, and I think this idea solidified for me over the last several years is that if you're going to be in either of those realms, it should be because that's where your passion lies. That's where you want to be. You want to be doing clinical research. You want to be working with patients. It shouldn't be that there's a lack of alternatives in the field. And that was what I felt, is I felt, even though I love clinical work and even though I'm incredibly interested in research, it wasn't necessarily the right fit for me. There was something missing that I was really hoping to gain. And for me, it felt like it was this ability to make a broader impact on a community, on a company. And I saw leadership as kind of the place for that. I remember when I was in graduate school, I attended a panel on non-traditional careers in behavioral medicine. And it was incredibly exciting to even think there was a panel that had this title because it hadn't really been something on my radar before. And one of the panelists was a policy advisor for National Cancer Institute and US Department of Health and Human Services. And as she was describing her work and how she bridges science and policy, I remember thinking, like, wow, she has a voice. Like, she as a scientist is telling administrators and policymakers what's up. Like, maybe as a clinician, I can do that too. And I was really determined after that to find a way. And when I applied for this job at Iora, I entered as a clinician, like you said, and I was hired as a clinical care team member and knew already that I was going to love that. But I think from my very first conversation with the recruiting and hiring teams, the conversation was about developing a program and growing a community presence and building relationships across the company, really being able to create something from the ground up and have a major voice in that, in the way that made sense as a clinician, what a program should look like, what a community presence should look like. And on both ends, we had these big ideas about growth for the behavioral health program. And I think those ideas were received on both sides with openness and curiosity. And I could tell that it was going to be fast paced and there was going to be a lot of learning and a lot of iteration. And that was exciting to me. I could tell I wasn't going to be bored and that I could challenge myself and assert myself as a leader. And that would fuel the opportunity even more. So that was really exciting to me. And to join something that I was excited about, but already knowing that was just the tip of the iceberg and there was going to be a lot more to explore. So I think that has sort of been where that cascade came from since joining Iora, now One Medical. It's really been like a choose your own adventure kind of situation that has helped me understand better what leadership really can and should look like.
I think that that's a great way to define how someone can be happy in their professional life. Like, you know that you have a fire within you, but you need to have air to fuel that fire. And so The way that you've described it for me is like you accepted it because you knew that at this organization, One Medical was going to provide the air to fuel your fire. And it's obvious that they're doing a great job. And I'm glad to see that you are, you know, burning brighter than ever before. Elle, you know, along the way, you mentioned an individual that you saw at a conference that kind of inspired you at this point. But I'm sure that there have been more mentors or sponsors that you feel have been more hands-on with your career or helping you rise to the level of success. Is there a person or an individual or two that you would like to publicly acknowledge on this show today for being an instrumental factor in helping you make decisions and come to where you are today? Because I feel that it's always important that when somebody has poured themselves into us, that they should know like how much they mean to us. So I'd love to hear those individuals and the story behind them.
Absolutely. So I have been blessed with many incredible mentors throughout my education, throughout my career. So it's difficult to think about pinpointing just one. So I will refuse, but I'll compromise and I'll limit myself to two. I think you mentioned I could have two. So first and foremost, my dad, Dr. Maury Markman, he's an oncologist, and he had a somewhat similar journey from clinician to healthcare leader. Growing up, I had no real awareness of what he did, which I think is a pretty universal experience of children. I didn't even really appreciate, I think, his impact on the field of oncology until very recently. I didn't process really that he had gone to school to earn his master of science in health policy and management, which is a similar degree to the master's I ended up pursuing, with really the same intention to learn and grow and be positioned to make a bigger impact on healthcare for a population. And as an adult and a professional, I now appreciate just how impressive a clinical leader he is and the respect he's earned among his peers and kind of the path that he's paved. And I think reflecting on his career and then thinking about my own and seeing these parallel trajectories, it really motivates me to think how far I can go myself in the next 30 years in that same way. And then secondly, my manager and my mentor at Iora, now in medical, Dr. Lindsay Botsford, family medicine physician and market medical director in our Houston market. So Lindsay has modeled for me what it means to share in and promote someone's vision and to elevate and empower them. And her management and mentorship has been incredibly impactful for me on, I think, two major levels. First, as a woman supporting women in healthcare and leadership, and second, as a physician supporting a psychologist in medicine. That's very rare. And, you know, physicians are the top dogs in healthcare. And often that's a power differential that's innately keeping psychologists and behavioral health providers more broadly down or kind of in this box or in the silo. But when a physician champions a non-physician, it really creates an essential opportunity for diverse voices in healthcare leadership, like I mentioned before. And Lindsay, Dr. Botsford, has very much done that for me.
These are great examples. And I love how... So you struck a memory for me, right? Because my father is an infectious disease and geriatrics doctor, and he has been for 50 plus years. He's 85 today. Today is his birthday. So when this interview is over, I'm going next door to go celebrate his birthday. It's so fascinating because, yes, when I was a kid, you know, oh, my dad's a doctor. But what does that mean? I don't know. He's a doctor. Understand that. But you know, as you get older, there is a sense of appreciation that becomes apparent with age and wisdom. So I'm glad to hear that you said that. And also for the mentor that you mentioned, Lindsay, Dr. Bosworth?
Dr. Botsford.
Yeah. No, I think that that's great, right? Because it takes a certain amount of courage and a little bit of rebelliousness, craziness, whatever you want to call it, to take that on, because There's a potential risk, right, of being shunned by other doctors within the community. Like, why would you do that? But if they see something in you and they recognize, like, this is absolutely worth the investment, thank you for sharing their names and their stories on this show. And hopefully they'll listen and they'll realize how much they how much they meant to you and they mean to you today.
Absolutely.
Elle, as the future continues to come upon us, right, there's so many other things that I'm sure that you are going to be involved with. Is there something on your professional bucket list that you've targeted as what you want to do next? It doesn't have to be in another role or with, you know, within the company or anything like that, but what else do you want to see yourself working towards as a goal within the next 2 or 3 years that you want to champion or solve for on your own?
I'm really, really laser focused right now on making our integrated behavioral health program as comprehensive and robust and impactful as it can be. And I, like I mentioned, I mean, we even today at an integrated behavioral health program, it's challenging to think about kind of broadening a scope of what that actually means. And one of the things I'm really excited about that I'm working on now in partnership with some amazing team members at One Medical is this idea of social determinants of health as a piece of kind of this robust clinical program and bridging this gap even between behavioral health and social health. And so what I am really most excited about right now is being able to help and be a contributor in building up this social determinants of health screening and resource connection, and hopefully partnership building for all of our patients to make sure that when we're thinking about health, like we're leaders in thinking about health in a new way, in a more robust way, in this whole patient, whole person way. And so I think for me, really focusing in on that and really figuring out how to better capture behavioral health impact when it comes to chronic conditions and when it comes to this idea of value-based care and where integrated behavioral health fits into that, to be one of the leaders as a company in defining that and driving competitors to overall make our industry much more inclusive as far as health. That's really my focus area right now. And I'm very happy to be a part of it.
I'm so glad. And I can see things happening well, like for you and the company in the next few years, because of the way that you approach problems, right? I think that that's something that's really remarkable. When I first spoke with you prior to this interview, it's like, you know, I saw that, like how when you speak, you know, you light up because you realize that there's so much work that needs to be done and there's a way that it should be properly addressed. So I'm really excited about that. Elle, when I think about, you know, leadership development, right? Like, you know, we've talked about this several times now on this show, which is, you know, we want to see more clinicians moving into a leadership space so that they can have more meaningful impact from a policy perspective, from a leadership perspective. There's two elements to leadership, right? There's experience and then there's education. The experience part is, you know, you get thrown into the middle of something and you're like, whoa, this is new. But hey, we've got to, you know, fix this problem and we're going to do it right. So let's move forward. And then there's the training part that comes with it. So I always ask my guests, you know, what are some sources for leadership development that you naturally gravitate towards or that you're reading today? It could be a book, it could be a video, could be a speaker and author that you kind of rely on from your perspective individually to help you grow as a leader and that you are also sharing with your team to help them develop their leadership skills as well.
So what I found about myself is that when I am developing personally, it comes out in my leadership. The first thing that comes to my mind that I would recommend, and I recommend this to everyone, it's a little bit, I think, indirectly related to your question and indirectly related to what we've been talking about. But for me, it really is the answer is there's a book called The Book of Joy by the Dalai Lama, the late Archbishop Desmond Tutu and Douglas Abrams. And I read it when I was feeling a little bit lost in my career. And found it very personally, but then I think downstream professionally re-energizing. And I think a lot of people need that right now. So the book is about the challenges of finding joy, but ultimately it's really about the Dalai Lama and Archbishop's friendship. And these are, you know, we're talking about two of the greatest moral leaders of our times. And they're just kind of chatting like two old friends. And they both have lived lives filled with oppression and exile. And yet they're able to maintain this really remarkable humility and gratitude and compassion for all others. And they're able to share that in a way that really resonates and does not at the same time diminish or invalidate feelings of anger and suffering. And I think that's a very difficult dialectic to hold. But being a fly on the wall during this discussion, you're able to kind of sit in that understanding with them. And understand, like, one of the biggest things that they really reiterate is this idea of removing the barrier between who we see as self and us and other. And to me, that really spoke a lot to how we think about healthcare as well, and how we can think about kind of raising each other up and reminding us that, you know, we're not created as independent or self-sufficient beings entirely, but more so for this idea of interdependence, mutual support, raising each other up. And so for me, I think when you think about that from a mindset of healthcare and our responsibility in healthcare and the direction we want to go and how are we going to actually accomplish all of these things that we're talking about, when we kind of go back to that at our root, it really helped me to kind of think through and even on kind of a management level to think through how to interact with people with respect and dignity and curiosity and openness. So I recommend that book, whether it's really going to be more impactful for you all on a personal level, professional level, or a leadership level. I think it can hit all of those marks.
I think that's a great recommendation, Elle. I'm really happy to put that on my reading list, because, you know, when I talk to people, I think that sometimes they have this mindset that, oh, a leadership book has to be this kind of book. Right. And a professional advancement book has to, you know, fit this mold, and a person and they all can't touch. Right. A personal book won't. That's not true. And we're all like we're all one human being with multiple stripes in ourselves and a multiple perspectives. And, you know, when you bring work to life, you know, people bring work home and people bring home to work. It's just a natural part of who we are. And so I'm really excited to now add this book. And I love both of those individuals. Bishop Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama are remarkable individuals who truly lead by example. So I appreciate that recommendation. And I'm sure my listeners do as well. Elle, when you think about your team, right, there are, as I've mentioned before, right, a leader's job is to produce more leaders. And part of that is for you to help develop the people who are on your team, but also to add new people to your team that may be coming, that may be able to bring new perspectives, new knowledge, new insights. When you think about individuals that either you want to hire or promote up, what are some of the qualities that you look for in that person to determine if they would be a good fit for your team or if they're ready for the next level?
Great question. So, okay, first I'm going to say upfront that our program is growing and we're hiring. So this might sound like a little bit of a sales pitch, but I'm hoping it's a successful one. So as far as kind of what we look for broadly as for members of the team, kind of beyond the basic level of licensed behavioral health providers, strong knowledge and experience in behavioral medicine and evidence-based treatment, experience with a multidisciplinary team, or ideally in the PCBH model, I think to me the most unique and exciting qualities to make a candidate stand out are if they like to wear a lot of different hats. So they love direct patient care, but they also like to teach. They're self-identified data nerds. They like to dig into pop health data. They like to find patterns and think about solutions. Or maybe they are constantly wanting to learn in certain areas that they don't have much training about or don't know much about. They want to join work groups. I think PCBH is all about flexibility and dipping your hands into a lot of things. Like I said, wearing a lot of hats. And if that, the idea energizes you, and you can see that with candidates when they're talking about, oh, what about if I did this? Is there a way to get involved in that? What does your day-to-day look like? And you start describing all the various meetings you go to and their eyes light up. That's when you know, like, this might actually be a good place for you. So if all of that energizes any of you listening, maybe this would be a good place for you as well. I think also someone who sees opportunity in ambiguity and is a self-starter. And that's a huge one for me. So someone who gets really jazzed about process improvement, program development, sees a gap and wants to build something to fix it, or to kind of iterate on to make something better over time. There's tremendous opportunity in primary care behavioral health to think of creatively and take on projects that are meaningful to you and inherently grow as a leader in the process as you learn and stumble and succeed. And in my opinion, I think that's the best part of the model of primary care behavioral health for a behavioral health provider. And then finally, I think this one's a little bit more focused on promotion and kind of moving more into leadership. Having a put me in coach mentality is huge, like showing rather than telling that you're ready for a higher level of responsibility or leadership is really the best way. It's like a working interview, right? Like you're showing, hey, I'm already doing this. Look at me kind of grow and thrive in this way. Wouldn't it make sense for me to be in this leadership position? I think that is what stands out the most to me. That's just the easiest way to be able to demonstrate kind of your worth and your value and kind of naturally move up into a leadership role.
So listeners, if you match two or all three of those qualities, please reach out to my good friend, Elle Markman. I believe she would love to have a conversation with you.
Yes, please do.
Excellent. Elle, you've been providing so many great insights and so many wonderful pearls of wisdom throughout the show. Is there a final piece of advice that you'd want to share with the listeners today if they're wondering how else that they can advance their career or what else is out there? Like, what is one piece of advice that if you could go back to your own former self, your younger self that might have been lost at some point, what advice would you give them to continue to do, start doing, or stop doing to help them reach the level of success where you are now?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think two big things stand out to me, two answers. So the first is that your personal characteristics and your strengths, whatever they are your tools for success. So I actually did not have insight to this for a very long time. And I think upon reflection more recently, I was fortunate to kind of have unknowingly leaned into it. And so I would encourage folks to more intentionally lean into it. I think it's my personal characteristics and looking at other leaders who I admire and work with, their personal characteristics are what make them who they are today and where they are today. I used to have a very rigid schema of what a leader looked like. And it certainly wasn't me. It was someone who I think walked into a room and commanded that room and had the most supreme confidence and expertise and someone who always knew exactly what to do. I think, frankly, the vision of a leader in my mind was not a psychologist. It was not a woman. And it was certainly not me. You know, I'm friendly. I'm someone who gets along well with others and adapts to make people feel more comfortable. And somehow, I think that equated in my mind as a deficit in leadership. And yet I somehow found myself in leadership. And then finally, eventually I realized that was absolute nonsense. There was no like somehow you stumble into leadership. It's all of those things that are the why behind what made me a leader. And I think since I figured that out and leaned harder into those personal characteristics as a leader, my career and kind of trajectory in leadership has kind of felt like a new frontier. So that would be one piece of advice to others. Like just think about yourself, think about what your strengths are, what makes you who you are, and find your way with those in mind. Find kind of within your own self what is going to be your strength in leadership and just lean into it. Don't try to fight it. I think the other piece of advice or things that come to my mind that I would share with listeners is actually some advice I received from another amazing mentor, clinical psychologist and woman in leadership, my co-director, Dr. Monica Downey. See, I managed to sneak one more person in there. and that is to take on visible projects. So you have to remember that you're your strongest advocate. Show yourself off. You're going to be asked to and given opportunities to do a million things and no one can do it all. So there's always this question of like, what do I choose? How do I prioritize projects and work? And I would say if you're hoping to move into leadership and really raise your voice, take on the visible projects. Listen for what's most important to your company. Pay attention to program or company priorities and really lean into those projects and initiatives. Elevate yourself as an owner or a leader in those projects. And I think when you do that, three big things happen. One, you learn a lot about what's important outside of your own lens. Two, you create space for what you believe is most important yourself. And third, you get people to listen to you. And that is a really hard thing to do. And when you get to a place where you're able to make people listen, that's when you really make change happen.
Wow. Oh, where were you when I needed you when I was younger?
Oh, those are all fantastic points and really resonate so deeply within me. And I'm very confident that it will be very instrumental in helping my listeners also prepare for their future. Oh, you've been a remarkable guest. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the show. It was really a pleasure to have you as a guest on the Healthcare and Hire podcast. I'm excited to see you succeed the rest of the year, and I'm wishing you the absolute very best as you continue to take healthcare to a higher level.
Thank you so much. This has honestly been such a pleasure, and it's such an honor to be asked. I mean, listening to the podcast and hearing the very impressive people who you have on, it feels like a huge win to me, and I'm very humbled to think that I can be a part of it too. So thank you so much, and I really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Hire podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.